2.5, 3 weeks ago, maybe. And I haven't, haven't touched a club since. And I like it that way. I was always in school. I remember having this conversation with my coaches. It was like, I like having a break from golf. You know, mindset and playing freely, having fun, whatever you want to call it, is so big in the game of golf. And I've definitely changed my mindset on golf. Like, I used to be feel nervous and tentative and make poor decisions based on how I was feeling emotionally. But then confidence is, like, I think one of the biggest things in golf. Body language, positive mental attitude, self-talk, you know, they're the biggest things. If you stand there and say that you're going to hit a good shot, probably 7-8 times out of 10, it's going to be a better shot.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Harry, welcome to the studio, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we were just talking a little bit before, but then when I sat down, I was trying to think of how many people either that were a part of the U of M team or have been or alumni, like the deal that you're starting, have been on the pod. We've had Justin Smith, Gaugert, we've had Angus, and I think I told you one more. Who am I missing?
Ben Warrion.
Oh yeah, and Ben Warrion. Yeah. So now you're
Jeep
our fifth.
Well, do you have Jeep?
I haven't had Jeep. Jeep is just a close friend of mine. Okay. He's helped me out with my game, my equipment. He's caddied for me before, but he hasn't been on the pod. I need him to. But he's so under the radar, man. Like, you can't. I mean, honestly, if you didn't play golf at the U, I don't know if you could find a footprint on him.
No,
truly. He doesn't have social media.
No.
He doesn't do any of that stuff. So thanks for coming out and welcome to the Member Guest Studio. What do you think?
This is more
or less than what you thought.
It's pretty cool. You probably spend a lot of time down there. Hitting
everybody balls. Jokes about the hole I've gotten there.
I was going to say, is that too many reps or is that too much
probably,
power?
Yeah, no, I think this winter I need to work a little more on technique and not just banging balls. Maybe you can talk to me a little bit about that. But before we get into it, so you played at the U of M, you graduated, was it last year?
2022, a couple years ago. And I did actually have a brief stint, kind of complicated visa issues. I actually transferred to the University of Central Arkansas.
Okay. So I was born in Arkansas.
Oh, really?
Where? Yes. Little Rock.
Oh, yeah, that's it. It's in Conway.
So I was born in Little Rock, and then we lived in Cabot.
Oh, yeah.
My mom and sister went to Arkansas. I toured it, but it wasn't for me. So I'm a Razorback fan.
Yeah,
me and Daly. That's why Daly's on the intro. We big, baby.
Makes sense. We had a teammate. So I say we, another former teammate, Harrison Arnold, also from England. We kind of actually went there together. So it's kind of a cool story, but we had a teammate who was from Cabot as well.
So where are you from? Because I hear the accent. You said you're from England?
I am from England, from Southeast London. So obviously you've had Angus on. He's from a place called Woking. It's probably 45 minutes from me.
No, not far at all. Yeah, did you guys know each other or how, like?
Yeah, we did.
Or was it just like the craziest coincidence that two kids from England, 40 minutes from each other, both went to the U?
No, we did. He went to a school very similar to mine. We used to play against each other in the same kind of tournaments in high school. And we also played for the same county. County golf is really big back home. We represent our county, which was Surrey, and we would play other counties. And we also actually had the same swing coach growing up.
No way.
Jim Christine, older guy, he was a county coach and we both saw him. So yeah, it was kind of a small world moment type of thing.
So then what led you, you live in Minnesota now, obviously.
I do, yes.
Yeah. So what led you here?
It's honestly Angus. I mean, that was kind
really?
Of how
okay.
happened. Yeah.
Shout out Angus.
Yeah.
Beefsteaks, man.
Yeah.
Shout out Beefsteaks.
Justin Smith, he was, watching Angus at the Caris, which is the English under 18s basically. Right place, right time. I played some good golf. He came up to me, asked if I wanted to play college golf, and basically it went on from there and I committed the next week.
Was college golf on the radar? I mean, like, I guess, what's it like overseas compared to here? Because I mean, like, the quote unquote natural trajectory of like U.S. golf is you play in high school, then you probably go and play in college.
Right.
And then, you know, you try and go get status somewhere, get your card somewhere to ultimately make it to the tour. Is that how it works in England, or like, is everybody trying to get to the States to play, or like, how is that the same trajectory? Like, do you guys play college golf over there or no?
So I say we do and we don't. We do in the respect of there's a couple of schools that do it. And I think, you know, you just saw there was a tournament right now in St. Andrews.
Yeah, yeah.
So St. Andrews, more Scottish schools do it.
So it's not like America where school has a program, exactly. D1, 2, yeah, 3. Yeah.
No, it's not like that at all. It's more of a social thing. Like you do it to meet other people, basically, of your age. America was always on my radar. I was actually using an agency, which is, you know, what a lot of kids do. Unless you're like really good and they approach you, you probably use an agency. They'll basically take your golfing resume.
That's interesting you say that because we went to Ireland this year. It was my first time playing outside the States and we did a couple episodes on it. I don't know, maybe like a month or two ago. And I told Andy, like I was sitting right here and I told him like the biggest thing I noticed about golf over there is it's way more social.
Yes.
Like, I don't know the politically correct way to say it, but other than, you know, here it's very, you know, there can be a barrier to entry, especially if you want to play like at country clubs and stuff like that. And over there, like, everybody's equal, man. Like everybody golfs.
Yeah.
Whether it's for fun or like competitively. And they're so proud of like their local courses that they play at. It's just a very social thing, like all the way down to the caddies. I mean, we had some caddies that they don't even really play golf. They just enjoy like the sport and caddying.
Yeah.
And that was a different thing for me too. Like they're just, this is kind of what I do for fun. Like I like to caddy.
Yeah.
And that's not really what it is here. It's different.
The thing that I find back home versus to here, I'd say here there's a, and you kind of alluded to it there, there's the country club. I don't know how you want to describe it.
But yeah, country club, there's private golf.
Yeah, I'd say there's more public courses back home. So, you know, it's more frequent. Like my dad, for example, he doesn't belong to a club, but he'll just go and play, you know, 5-6 random clubs, make a tee time, go and play. So I think there's a little bit more of a social aspect to that. People don't, I wouldn't say members technically all the time. They can just bounce around.
Yeah, they're kind of like semi-private or they have, you know, a deal at a place. Like I think most places we play, there's maybe one that was like private and the members were actually caddies for us, which is also not a thing here either, right? They were very proud about their club and like showing us their place. And that was super cool. I mean, like I truly wish it was a little bit more like that here, where if we had guests in town, you know, like, As a member, you would have to caddy for a guest once a year or something like that.
Yeah, because I mean,
it's a cool concept.
Here it's like, you know, if you're a member, you can bring out guests, but there has to be a member in the group type of thing, not the caddy.
Exactly. Well, the reason we wanted you on, one, shout out to Drew for connecting us. I see the Interlaken. Did you work at Interlaken as well with Drew, or how did you two meet, Drew Bosley?
Yeah, so post school, quick background, obviously being on a student visa, I got a 1-year work visa post school, which basically meant I can practice in the field that I studied and get some work experience. And my first job out of school with that visa was working at Interlaken, and I was outside services type of thing. And Drew was technically that outside services kind of co-manager with a couple other guys. And he hired me, we got chatting, and then we ended up living together. And we play a bunch of two-man scrambles, better ball events, just a bunch of golf together, basically. Yeah, he's been a really good friend to me.
I was going to say, I'm glad you didn't just spoil it, because you guys just qualified for the U.S. four-ball amateur.
Yes.
Is that the U.S. amateur four-ball or four-ball U.S.?
USGA four-ball, I think.
I was just joking with, so I had a guest on, Dave Carruthers. Do you know Mama? He's an alumni. He played at the U too. It was 40 years ago, but he played at the U.
Yeah, no, I know Dave. We had lunch probably 3-4 months ago.
Oh, no way. Yeah, so I play a decent amount with Mama and had him on because he qualified and played in the senior AM this year.
Oh, I did see that.
And so I had him on and I was just kind of joking about like how difficult and confusing all of the like terms and tournaments and how you qualify for all of them is. I think I was joking with you and I said, I was like, do they do a mid-AM or like a four-ball mid for one?
They do a lot and the qualifying's weird and they've changed it up this year for a couple of them.
Yeah, but so you guys qualified for the US, the AM four-ball. So where was it at? How do you guys play? Obviously you made it through. I had a couple of buddies that played and didn't make it. So I'm curious to hear, you know, the whole experience and like how you guys are prepping for when you play and like, that's awesome, man. Congrats.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So I actually tried last year with Harrison down in Arkansas. We didn't make it. So this was the first time that I tried with Drew. It was at the Wilds, here in town or Prior Lake. And we actually prep wise, you know, we didn't actually play a ton of golf leading into it type of thing. And I didn't personally. We did do a practice round, like, I want to say about a week before, and we played really well in the practice round. We don't like scoring in practice rounds, but for that one we did. And I think I want to say we shot maybe 11, 12 under.
So when you say practice round, like, this is just on your guys' own accord, right? It wasn't, they don't do practice rounds when
We just phoned up, got time, okay, and just wanted to check out the course. I hadn't played it, and I don't know if he hadn't, but we just kind of wanted to see, because we have completely opposite games, like completely opposite.
So I'm going to guess that you're a bomb and gouge player, and he's straight and conservative, and you're the opposite. You're bomb and gouge. Is that?
Yeah. No,
I've only played with Drew once, but that was my,
that's the one
through 18. That's what I picked up, man. Like, he hits it dead straight. He knows exactly where every ball's going. It's not super long, but he just, it's like death by a thousand cuts when you're playing him, right? Like, he's that's straight. You can tell he just has the natural swing. Like, he's got it. You know, the rest of us have to work for it. Like, he's just got it.
Yeah, no, he's very natural. And yeah, you kind of put it in a great way. He doesn't necessarily hit it the longest, but he's very straight, and that works, because especially around there, there's a lot of birdie opportunities. I hit it longer than him.
So you were the birdie guy and he's the don't make bogey guy. Right?
Yeah, but that being said, he did come in clutch on the day with a couple of birdies, and, you know, great situation of ham and egg. I played nice on the front and got on a little heater, and then, you know, we needed one coming in on the last like four holes, and he came in clutch. He made a birdie. So it's like it worked both ways. He played really well, I played really well. It's always nice when, you know, you play with someone like that and they can make pars and free up the guy who hits it a little bit longer. He might hit a driver on a short risk reward par four or something like that. So it just worked really well on the day. So.
Yeah. How nice is it when you can like tee out, you know, so I'm kind of a bomb and gouge guy myself. Uh-huh. I'll be working on hitting it a lot straighter this off season. But generally speaking, that's my game. Like, hit it far, decade golf, try and get wedges into everything, you know, that style of play. But how nice is it when you're playing in like a four ball and your partner goes in front of you and it's just center fairway every time, and you just feel free, right? Like, you're just able to play free and almost a little more risky, if you will. That's kind of what you need in those formats.
Yeah, and we have a thing. He always goes first on everything, drive.
If I was playing four ball with him, I'd for sure have him go first on everything.
So he goes first. I mean, he just hits driver everywhere, hits it straight, hits fairways. And yeah, like you said, I mean, he freed me up all day. I think I want to say maybe missed one fairway all day.
Yeah, sounds like true.
In the rough type of thing. So it wasn't like it was in danger, so.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's it like? So when you played in college, they do four ball events in college at all? I'm not like tying you to a four ball guy, but no. I'm just kind of curious. Like, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the different styles of play, because I've noticed now as an amateur playing more stuff, signing up for like MGA events. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm probably going to play in the four ball next year. I'm going to play in more competitive tournaments, and it feels like there's more. You know, there's other things that you can sign up that aren't just stroke play, right? Like, there are a lot of stroke play events, but there's also a lot of like match play and four ball types of events. And so I'm kind of curious on just your logic and thinking, like, do you think you're a little bit better in four ball, or do you think it's just golf is golf? And like, how do you approach it?
It's a good question. I mean, going back to what you said in college, I don't think there's a four ball event. I know that we might do like an inter squad four ball with, say, the ladies team or the women's team and play like a Ryder Cup style. But I think post-school, I think I like the more team format, because, you know, I feel like sometimes playing stroke play events and qualifiers, it can get very, I don't know, stressful, if you put it that way. And Drew and I, at least, going back to Drew, I mean, we love playing in scrambles, best ball events, anything team-oriented, I like, because for me, I just like just ripping it, sending it.
You like having a little bit of backup?
Just banging driver, and if I'm leaving wedges in for my guys, then that's fun, right? Making birdies.
See what
fun.
Happens.
Making birdies is fun. I mean, the stroke play stuff is great as well. But
so, do you play any other amateur stuff in the state? Do you sign up for all of it? Like, what's the? I'm also, you know, semi curious. I got a lot of friends that played like collegiate golf, and they might not be pursuing golf professionally, right? Like, we all know how much of a grind it is. It's not for everybody. It's really freaking hard. But it seems like the common theme with everybody is still wanting to play golf at like a competitive elite level, because you've got that one, you have the experience, which goes a tremendous, goes a long way. And then two, it's kind of like you got to scratch the itch. And so are you going to continue to play amateur stuff in Minnesota and try and get in like USGA events, or what's life like?
What's the goal?
What's the goal?
Yeah, you know, I think I understood pretty early on in my career that I wasn't going to make a career in golf, i.e. playing professionally on tour, you know, the dream that most people have. So post school, I kind of took a little break from it, didn't really play much. And now I play everything from Stay Am, Stay Open, even smaller events. I try and play in as much as I can.
Really? All competitive stuff?
Yeah, mostly I would say. You know, obviously we sprinkle in a couple of, you know, more of the fun sure. events. But yeah, I definitely like to stay competitive. And I try and schedule my time in blocks. So I would kind of have a ramp up phase of, say, I'd put three or four events in, you know, in the space of 2 or 3 weeks, which in Minnesota is pretty easy to do because most of the events are in May and June. And then I would kind of ramp up my practice time and have huge time off. Like, I haven't touched a club since the four ball,
and that was that month ago,
2.5-3 weeks ago maybe, and I haven't haven't touched a club since, and I like it that way. I was always in school. I remember having this conversation with my coaches. It was like, I like having a break from golf, and so and I love to play competitively, so that's why I just try and schedule my time out a little bit.
Yeah, I want to pick your brain on that, and I think like some listeners will resonate with this too, because you know, we talk about a lot of things in golf. Like, the point of the podcast has always been to talk about kind of everything, like the unique stuff. But really at the core of like who we are and who I am is an amateur golfer aspiring to get better and kind of take that next level of like a, you know, club golfer that's, you know, single digit handicap to somebody who's like a plus handicap, plays competitively and is trying to, you know, take the next level. And I've always kind of self-diagnosed myself as somebody like, I don't have any experience playing tournament golf, right? Like, my first ever like real tournament was last year in the Mid-Am. Like, that was my first time playing a legitimate tournament golf where
scorecard in hand.
Yeah. We're like, yeah. I'm kind of forgetting that I got to tap in a one footer, right? Like, right. And so it's really different. And to talk to guys like you that like played competitively in high school and college and is kind of like second nature, would love to pick your brain on just, you know, the right way to kind of parse it out a little bit. You know, it sounds like your theory might be a little bit different where like you literally don't touch golf clubs. I don't know if I could ever do that. Like, one, I've got the simulator in here too. Yeah, like, right. I love to practice and grind. Uh-huh. But I do know that there is a portion to golf where like you do need a rest, you do need a break. But it also, to me, feels like a sport that you have to continually be practicing and getting better. Otherwise, you're going to fall behind. And so like when you're looking at your summer and you're looking at the competitive golf rounds, you know, one, what are you looking at? And like in terms of the actual events, do you know who Phil Ebner is?
I know Phil.
So Phil told me every year he's got four majors. That's what he thinks of. He's got I think it's the Minnesota Senior. He's got the Spooner, up at, Northland Country Club. Yeah. He's got the McKenzie Cup at Winsong, and then one other that he plays. And those are considered like his four majors. And his whole year is kind of centered around competing in those. And so I want to get your take on like how you kind of structure your season around this stuff. Because as I look to next year, I'm going to play a lot more than just the Mid-Am. Like, that's really all I've ever done. And I'm going to sign up for some, but I don't want it to be too overbearing, right? Like, some of these tournaments can be three straight days of like stroke play, grinding everything out. So I'd love to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you could take so many different avenues with that. I mean, I think obviously the nice thing with in the state of Minnesota is, right, is our season is relatively short, I would say, compared to others. You know, that it's kind of when the snow's not on the ground. So that I think that helps you in the regards of cadence and frequency of events. First thing I do, I mean, if you're looking at on a clean slate, I basically schedule my events way ahead of time. They come out, I would say, in probably December, January time. And I basically schedule out all the events that I want to play. For me, it's, you know, my majors probably in this state would be...
I'll tier your four majors. Yeah, I'm going to start asking. This is a great bit.
Four majors.
Shout out to Phil. This is a great bit. I'm going to start asking people their four majors of the year.
For me, it's got to be State Am, State Open, naturally. Now that I'm 25, probably the U.S. Mid-Am is going to be a pretty big one for me.
I have a stupid question. What's the difference between the State Am and the State Open? Is it that the State Open allows pros and the State Am is only amateurs? Is correct. That the only difference?
Yes. Yeah.
But obviously amateurs can play in the State Open.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. And they compete, you know, just as fine. So I'd say that. And then I do the Minnesota Public Links Golf Association, I think it is. They do events. I like to play in those. They're kind of just, you know, I call them fillers in the schedule. you know, you can earn player points if that's your thing, get experience or kind of warm up rounds before your qualifiers of AM Open.
Sure.
I think a big thing that I look at, which I don't think a ton of people look at, is the courses that these qualifiers are on. So for us in this state, you know, there's a bunch of qualifiers where it's like 8 qualifiers for the Open, 12 for the AM. And I think, you know, you alluded to you being a bomber and a gouger. I would look at that as
finding the courses that play well for that.
Because I think, you know, it's on you to play good golf and you should be able to qualify for one of these at any course that they have host a qualifier at. But I think you got to try and play to your advantages a little bit after you've kind of identified what tournaments to kind of take your fancy, if you want to call it.
So like for the state AM and the state open, you got to qualify. Is it just one qualifier or how do you get in? Unless obviously you have exemption, but how do you
The AM is 18 hole qualifier. You choose one site, and I would say depending on, you know, size of field, it's probably 8 to 12 guys basically make it through.
Okay.
The open, you kind of get two chances. You get your first chance, and if you don't make it through, probably I would say 4 to 6 guys make it through. You also have the second chance qualifier, which again is another one day shootout.
And got it.
Low 3 or 4 go type of thing.
Okay. Have you ever been exempt in any of those?
I have not. No, bad golf on my part.
Well, I don't know, man. You just qualified for the we're not talking like Minnesota. We're talking the U.S. four ball.
Yeah.
Like,
no. I played in one AM and two opens. I played in the open this year at Rush Creek. Got through in a playoff at Oak Marsh, I want to say.
On
the east side of town.
Yep.
Got through in a playoff there. Struggled at Rush Creek. Had the wangs of the driver. I was trying to bomb it around the course.
Trying to bomb it and ended up not being able to gouge it.
Yeah.
One of those.
Yeah. So, but no, it's fun. I like kind of, I'm a big scheduler. I analyze a lot of things.
I just sign up for stuff thinking that like, hey, this will give me good experience. I think I'm finally at the point that I probably need to take that next step and look at stuff and take it a little bit more seriously and just play actual tournament golf and like put some, you know, more thought and feel into it, which I just haven't before. That's mainly because I had no experience. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I couldn't tell you the difference between, I probably didn't even know what four ball meant like 3 years ago. Serious. Like I had no clue what all this stuff was. My claim to fame, do you know Ben Siegel?
I don't know. Yeah.
Friend of the pod, just talked to him this morning. My claim to fame was asking him if he could play in if he could try to qualify for the USAM this year, because it was a Hazeltine. Mm-hmm. He's like, Hagel, I'm a pro.
Yeah, shit.
Sounded a lot cooler.
Yeah.
You know, when I first asked it, but like, seriously, I mean, I didn't understand all of it. So now I'm starting to kind of get a feel for it and really like understand all of it. Like, I think it's super cool too. Like just in golf that amateurs can do that. Like you can see amateurs playing in the US Open, right? Or that like the Masters, you know, invites the winners of the USAM. And I think even the winners of the US Mid-AM get to go get an invite to Augusta. Like, I think that's awesome. That doesn't happen in any other sport. Like, you're not just going to go suit up with LeBron James one day because you like won a 3-on-3 tournament. You know, that's pretty cool about golf.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. You know, I think going back to as well, the one thing that I found that helps me, you know, going back to my scheduling, we were just talking about that, is I use Decade. You kind of mentioned it before. So I look at my stats as well across the season. So like right now, probably here in the next, I want to say 2 to 3 weeks, I'll probably look at my stats from the year. And I don't have a ton of time to work on my game. You know, I might go in the morning and hit wedges at Empower. And we all know snow's coming, so you can't do as much as you want. But looking at stats, and a big thing that I do, I kind of was talking about, you know, choosing the golf courses. I'm a big analytical person. I get yardage books for every track I go to. I use a Decade app. I don't know if you've seen the...
I'm a Decade. I'm a soft user. Okay. I'm definitely going to do it more next year. I got a couple of yardage books right behind you that you can see. But like the hardest part for me the hardest part for me is like the data entry on every single round.
Uh-huh.
You know, I figured out kind of a way to put it on my scorecard and get pretty close. But I don't think I've really dialed it in to the extent that I should.
Yeah, so one thing I do, which I find really easy, is most of these tournaments that you play in, you get a pin sheet, right? I mean,
yeah.
So I kind of have my notes of, you know, I put, obviously with Decade, there's a mental scorecard. I put kind of a little dot if I was committed to the shot or across if I wasn't. I indicate if I hit the fairway, hit the green, how far I had in, and then how far my footage was for my putts. And it may seem a lot to you saying it, but like it's really quick. And then after the round, you just look at it and you just scan through it.
Yeah, that's what I do. So that's what I do as well. And like now I kind of want to talk about this because we have a lot of decade users that listen to the pod. So the Winsong scorecard has coincidentally three lines at the top, a break in the middle, and then three at the bottom. So like if you were envisioning a scorecard, you could do three player scores at the top and three at the bottom. On the top, I write down what club I hit off the tee. The second line, I write if I hit the fairway or not, just an X or a check mark. The third, I write down the number that I have in. And then at the bottom, I write, did I hit the green in reg? So GER, check or X. And then I write number of putts and then estimated distance of putts. And with those six things, I can usually get everything into to decade. The things I'm probably missing are like, you know, my tee shot, did it go left or right? Right. And then to your point, like I'll usually keep the pin sheet, put it in. The problem is it's a lot to remember. It's a lot to do. And usually I'll go like four or five holes. I'll forget two or three and I'll go back. And then I'm really bad at figuring out like when I missed the green, how far away was I?
Yeah.
Like chipping, you know, I try and do it on the map and I just, you know, some of the data that gets in there, it's like, oh, I'm 100% from 3 feet and in. And it's like, well,
doesn't seem
I know that's not right, but I think it's just because like, you know, I have a tap in for a foot or whatever. And like, clearly I've missed three footers before, but it's stuff like that. Then I look at the data, I'm like, shit, I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sometimes stats can be, they're tedious. You just got to try the best you can.
Yeah, so you do it every single round, like you're committed and every single scorecard.
Every competitive round, I don't really do social golf. I've seen my scores and decisions and stuff fluctuate so much that it doesn't reflect tournament pressure, if you want to call it that type of thing. So I just do tournament rounds and then I look into the stats and I actually kind of do a little bit on my own. And I'm a golf nerd. I call it like Excel spreadsheets and stuff. So I analyze, you know, more for me, you know, I hit the ball long, like most of my shots.
How far are we talking?
Last time I was at second.
What's the carry? What's the average carry?
I just got fit for a new driver at
GT2?
At second swing. GT3.
GT3?
I did have the Ping LS Tech, you know, the G430, the newest one. Yeah. Went to the GT3.
I've used all of them.
Yeah.
So.
I was carrying it 315, 320.
Okay, yeah. So you can move it.
Shout out Mr. Roth. I know you've
oh, yeah. Him. You see Aaron?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah, so.
I actually just went back to the Ping. I was trying the TSR2 out and like the distance, and it was actually really consistent. The problem for me was it felt like a bouncy ball coming off the cement. Like I had no feel with it.
Yeah.
Which probably for a guy your skill level doesn't matter that much. But for me, like I really want feel and feedback off the face because I don't hit the center of the face very often. So like I need that feedback to know, okay, I towed that one a little bit. I healed that one a little bit. And with that one, I literally had no clue where it's coming off the face.
Yeah.
So.
Well, technology these days, I mean, you can hit it off the hill and it will.
That's true.
Straight,
so. Yeah, there's just something I don't know what it is. I'm going to go back to it. I changed a little bit throughout the season. I liked the smoke, but there's just something about the Ping for me. Like it still goes pretty far. I think I probably carry it 293. So it's not short by any means. Like the TSR was further, but I'm trying to hit more fairways at this point to see if that's what gets me lower scores. So we'll see.
I
got the whole winter to figure it out.
Yeah, right. I mean the Ping I think is one of the most reliable. I had the G400 Max for the longest time. And last time I was home last Christmas, I actually broke it in balls in the cold.
So are you a equipment junkie too?
I wouldn't say as much as other people. Like I don't know.
You're pretty into it.
Yeah. Like, I know enough. Like I don't look at,
Let's go through what's in the bag and then we'll kind of talk about the four ball. Cause I want to hear, you know, how you guys are prepping and stuff. But, is anything going to change before the four ball or you keep it at the same?
Oh, good question. Wedges. I need to, and Drew will laugh at that when he hears that. We have a joke that I have zero spin. I mean, my wedges are terrible.
All right. So let's go through the bag then. I want to hear what's in the bag. I want to hear club, shaft, and then we'll go, top of the bag, irons, wedges, putter.
Okay. So, driver GT3, just put in the bag. God, I don't even know what shaft I've got in it. I want to say like a hazardous smoke maybe. I have a 5-wood in the bag that I just got fixed. Shout out to my dad for snapping that at the state four ball. Pulled out the bag and it was snapped. Longest serving club in my bag is the 2-iron, the Callaway Apex.
You're just in love with it, never going away from it.
Oh, I mean, I've had it since freshman year of college. I haven't gone away from it. It's a good fairway finder when I need one. Irons, I've got, and that's got an S300, so a pretty light shaft. In the irons, I've got P7 MCs, TaylorMade.
I hear those are really good.
Yeah, no, they're all.
Whenever people talk TaylorMade, yeah, they always say like, you know, the 790s or 770s, but I was doing some research on My Golf Spy, and those P whatever 7MCs or whatever they are, like, are always super high up on the list when I go and research the top, you know, performing stuff from them.
Yeah, I mean, I've had them, I think, on, say, sophomore, junior year of college, and, you know, it's that time now, like, a few years, you're like, oh, maybe it's a change, but it's like, I don't really need to. I mean, I hit them just fine.
Irons have got to be one of those things when you find the ones you love, you stick with.
Yeah, right.
I found a lot that I really like, you know, that I've dated for a bit, but I don't think I found the ones I love. I think I finally have the driver I love. I think I got to stick with the ping.
Yeah.
And I'm quickly becoming a lab guy, but I think irons, I still haven't found...
The ones?
I haven't found the one. I haven't proposed to them yet, you know?
I mean, there's so many out there. I mean, yeah, the TaylorMade's are great. I mean, obviously Mizuno's as well, but...
So that's what I got now.
Mizuno's, yeah. Wedges, Vokies.
And they're just old? That's why they don't spin?
They've just got zero grooves on them.
Really?
Yeah.
They're that old?
Yeah. The luxury at playing college golf, right, is you get wedges...
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a couple new wedges in the trunk of my car, but it's... My wedges distances were pretty dialed this year, and I knew that changing them is just going to change spin rates and distances, and if I was that dialed, I just didn't want to change it. So that's definitely an off-season project, kind of, you know.
Yeah. Wedges. Can I hear lofts and if you know the grind? Do you know the grind?
So I've got 50 degree, which is, I want to say... An 8F.
So you keep a P wedge in your TaylorMade and then you go.
Correct. 50. Yeah.
Okay.
So 50 degree is an 8F. And then I have a 54, which is like a 14F, I want to say. And then like a 58, which is new. I did have a 60-04L. And now I have a 58-08M. And I predominantly, people listen to this and who know me know I have not been a good chipper across, and like,
so they wonder why you have like four degrees of bounce.
And I'm like, Sam, they're like, can't hit a chip, fan it thin. And they're like, I think maybe like just you need more bounce.
So this is what I just did.
Yeah.
Like I was playing a 6T.
Okay.
The Titleist. So 6 degrees of bounce, yeah. toe grind. And I just went back to the TaylorMade MG4s, and it's like 11 degrees of bounce, SB11.
I mean, yeah, it's literally a cheat code. I mean, I've found my... I mean, obviously, there's technical things, right, that you can always work on, but any little helps you can get with from the physics of a golf club, I mean...
Yeah, so like anybody listening to this, my dad, shout out my dad and my mom listen to every episode, and like my mom doesn't know much about golf, but she loves her son, so she listens.
Yeah.
My dad's getting into golf, and so, you know, every now and again, he'll like mention something from the pod. And I think this is one area that a lot of people, you know, maybe that like, I'd say people start to pay attention to their bounces and their grinds once they get under maybe like a 6 handicap-ish. Again, generalizing, right? Like people don't hate me because I said that. But I think just generally speaking, like that's when you're really starting to dial stuff in like, okay, I'm close. Like what can I find next to get me down there? Bounce is always your friend, right? On the wedges. It's like if you look at the bottom of your sole and you've got a number like under 8 and you're wondering why you're bad at chipping, it's probably why, right? Like, I went to the 6 tee grind and really good out of bunkers because it just was able to knife through the sand, but off of like, you know, into the grain on bent grass fairways, not great.
Not great. Yeah.
Not great for me.
Yeah, no, you can play around and argue it so many different ways and there's technical aspects that play into it, but...
Well, for a bomber like you, too, and, you know, I consider myself, like, I hit it far as well. Yeah. I mean, I don't carry it 315 like you do, but, you know, I can carry it 290, 295. If I really get a hold of one, it'll go 3. Wedges, I've noticed this year, was like the days I went really low, the wedges were dialed, right? The days that I struggled, I couldn't hit a wedge inside 30 feet. Mm-hmm. And like, that's what Rory and DJ and everybody says, and John Ellis, who was on last night, he's like, you know, if you had an hour, I think he said, if you had an hour three times a week, if 45 minutes of that was on chipping and your wedge shots from 120 and in, you'd immediately reduce your handicap no matter what level you are. Like if you just worked on your wedges for 45 minutes.
I would certainly agree with that. And that's kind of what I did this year in terms of, you know, work in full-time job or part-time, I should say, and just the time that you have to be smart with it.
Like, yeah, you gotta maximize it.
Like for me, it was, you know, wedges in the morning at Empower in the sim. Shout out those guys. They've been great.
Did I see you in the parking lot there once? Was that you? Yeah. That was you. God, yeah, I just put that together. I was walking in, you were walking out, and you were like, now I remember that was you.
Yeah.
Ah, God, it's a small world.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, those guys have been great. I would just go, I would, you know, really early in the morning, I would do a really short workout, and then I would spend 30 minutes in the sim. And what I would do, I had my distances, I would warm up my distances, and I'd just do a combine a couple times. And then I would kind of use, they do a thing where you can simulate pins and greens.
Yeah.
And so I'd do that. And then I also, I coached, volunteer assist coach, the Edina boys golf team this year. So they were practicing out at Braemar, and I would do a ton of short game work at Braemar. And that's about it. The only time I would hit balls over 150 yards is if I was playing a practice round or playing a tournament.
Yeah, you probably don't do it much on the golf course unless you're really tipping it out.
Exactly. A lot of what my game is just drive a wedge. So why would I stand there and try and beat 7-iron to 5-iron?
Yeah, I was going to say, you got 5-irons maybe on the longer par 5s that you're trying to get around, or shorter par 5s that you're trying to get up around the green. But yeah, I hear you. That's it's been the detriment to my game. And it's also the place that we play. So like, I imagine you played Windsong.
Yes, plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, we have to hit 7, 6s, and 5 irons. Like a lot of the par threes, you know, like 16, 4 can be a 5-iron. I mean, 3, a lot of the times you got to hit a 5-iron off the tee unless you hit it dead straight, right? Yep. So like
10 is a longish one as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 10 can be one. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, 6 and 5 irons that I got to hit into there, but I generally speaking just need to get better, with the wedges, I think, in the off season. Cause my game would just improve tremendously. Cause I'm not good at that like 60 to 90 yard shot. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty good. I would say probably above average when I have a full, you know, wedge that's 100, 115, 130. Mm-hmm. But I start to get under those and all of a sudden I'm like missing greens and trying to get too aggressive and then I'm hitting it off the green and I'm chipping with that fucking 6 degrees worth of bounce and we all know how that goes, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, wedges is, I mean, just going back to the stats conversation, right? I mean, say you hit wedges, your average went from 23 feet to 16 feet in a season. I mean, just mathematically, you're going to be holing more putts from that range. I mean, it's just simple laws of math, but yeah.
Did you say what putter you use, speaking of?
I use a Toulon Las Vegas.
Toulon, so okay, yeah.
Like the fang, I call it the fang shape.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. So I've looked at it.
I've used that for a long, long time now, I want to say.
Yeah, is that that's the wifey that's staying in the bag?
You know what? It's funny that you say that. It's been the wifey, but I've been swayed recently by Lab Golf.
You have too.
Everyone has. And
I'm right behind you, man. Yeah, I'm Lab Golf.
I know Sway is one of the current guys on the team as well. He's got one of the, you know, the broom handle ones.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him, picking his brain a little bit about it. And, you know, he says inside, you know, 10 feet, it's killer. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, you can see mine.
As long as you can read
greens. Yeah. You can see mine right there. I mean, I use the counterbalance. I've historically been a tinkerer, and Lab was pretty new, I'd say 4-5 years ago. And I was pretty early on it. And when I got it, the thing I hated was that I couldn't look at it. I literally couldn't look at it. I'm like, what is this spaceship thing? And I'll get made fun of and all this stuff. But I did putt pretty well. And then I kind of went away from it. I was in Bettinardi for a while. Shout out those guys. I love Bettinardi putters. I still do. And I kind of had some struggles this year. And I can't remember if it was, it was a club championship. Last day of the club championship, barely broke 90 after playing, you know, okay the first 2 days. I mean, I wasn't in it, but like barely broke 90, couldn't make a putt. I had the mid-am Monday, right? And so like I shoot 90 and I'm like, I got to switch something up. So I walk into second swing, I throw my putter in the garbage or trade it in or whatever they do there. And I grab a Lab off the shelf. I'm like,
this is the
can't
one.
Get any worse. And I putt lights out. Like the first two, I think I three putt maybe once over 3 rounds at the mid-am. And those aren't easy pins. Like they tuck them.
On the one that Fox and...
Yeah, was it Fox and Chaska Town?
Yeah.
And I think I three putt once like over 3 days and it's been in ever since. And it's interesting now that I've used it more. You just, you know, when you start using, it's like when you see a new car, you drive a new car, you see everybody else in the same car. And now that I've got the Lab, I've just noticed how many people are using it and they swing themselves. You know, it's very similar to the Jailbird. Like it's kind of idiot proof for guys who are bad at putting, and that's me. And then, so I can't imagine what it's like for somebody that's good at putting and can line it up every time and can read greens. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised over the next year or two, you're going to see a lot more. I've noticed a lot of LIV guys that no longer are tied to their
contracts
and deals. Like, Dustin Johnson is in one of the old labs of the DF3, the one with like the circle and their logo.
Yeah,
he's gaming that.
I haven't even seen that.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I follow some of the LIV Golf stuff to kind of, you know, see what's going on. Yeah. And I see DJ rolling in birdie putts with the old DF3 and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So it is really interesting. I think you should give it a try. I do want to try the broomstick, but I looked at it once or twice and I haven't figured out the motion of it. You know, I'm like, do I hold the top hand and move the bottom, or do I move them both in unison?
Well, you can't anchor it, right? So I mean, that's
another
thing that you've got to consider as well.
Oh, I stood here too. And I was like, I wonder why they took away anchoring. And I anchored it and I realized why. Talk about a cheat code.
Oh yeah.
Who was it? Was it Adam Scott that used to have the anchor and was just, everybody's like, okay, something's going on here.
Questionable. Bernard Langer still does it. I mean,
he anchors. Yeah.
Well, people say sometimes, you know, it gets a little bit close, you know,
who was the guy, one of the best AMs in the state? He's a coach, Trey Fessler. You know, Trey Fessler. We were playing an event, the Saddle at Windsong maybe 2 weeks ago. And, I was picking his brain cause he uses it and he putts great with it. And I was like, Trey, are you anchoring? He's like, no, come here. And he kind of showed me. And like, he had the overhang of his shirt, right? And so it's touching his shirt, but like you could legit put your hand in front of it and see that it wasn't anchored. So I see why that looks that way, but also I don't know how they police it. Like, how would you ever know?
I don't know. Cheat code though.
Yeah, well, maybe once you get into it, you let me know how to use it, because everybody's using that damn broomstick now.
No, they are. A lot of people are.
Yeah, it's real good. So we've got the but I'm kind of attaching myself to you just now.
Love it.
So you got the four ball. When is it? When's the actual event? And maybe talk a little bit about the actual structure of it. And, you know, let's dream a little bit. Like, what happens if you guys win, right? Like, what's the tournament look like? You know, it's pretty cool that you guys been able to do this total USGA event, right? So this is big leagues for four ball.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, I think Drew as well, it's our first USGA event. So the championships, I'll say May 17th through the 21st, I think. It's in Edison, New Jersey, Plainfield Country Club. And I want to say the second course is Echo Lake, I want to say. So to my knowledge, it's 36-hole stroke play qualifying, one at each course. And then the top 32 teams maybe go through to match play.
Oh, so it's just like the other, so it goes stroke play for a round or two, and then it goes to match play.
Yes.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so... we'll probably get there a couple of days early. Obviously, a couple of practice rounds and stay. It's pretty close to New York, so I know my parents are coming from back home. And
when is it?
When?
Yeah.
May.
Next May.
Yeah, 17th through the 20th.
And so are there other qualifiers between now and then?
Yes, there will be. Yeah, no, they call it the golden ticket that you get when you win. That says basically you got your spot in the championship. It says, you know, we'll reach out with more information December, January time, because obviously...
There's other qualifiers.
Yeah, and us being Minnesota, we do it way...
Before anyone else, That's why, like, when I heard May, I was like, well, I mean, it makes sense. You can't do it much later than when you guys did it in Minnesota. Like,
yeah.
It's getting too cold now. So, so are you guys going to go out there before? Like, how are you going to prep for it? Like, I want to hear your process on, are you going to go full decade and like pull it up on the GPS and figure out what we're hitting off every tee?
I personally would probably do that. I mean, we have different approaches, Drew and I. I mean, and this actually, funnily enough, for the qualifier, we took a real laid back approach to it. You know, sometimes we also have this conversation. He says, you know, you might get a little bit too amped up. You kind of want it too much type of thing. Golf, you know,
you or just in general?
Me, you know, I think it's a generalist comment as well. You know, people want to win, they want to play well. And so we took the laid back approach of, you know, let's just go in it. I mean, I remember he messaged me a couple of days before, like, I feel good about this. Like, we're playing good. We just shot like 12 under in the practice round. Like,
yeah, that'll get it done.
We're playing good right now. And we went out and we just played freely. So I don't want that to change for the actual championship.
Sure.
Rep-wise, I'll probably look on decade. I'm sure we're going to get yardage books when we're there. We're going to have practice rounds. So as far as prep goes, I would say, you know, I go home. I see my swing coach back home over the winter. We'll do some work there. We'll probably ramp up some work here. And like I said, my ramp up period in February, March.
You can be at Empower with me.
Yeah. No, it's a great spot. I'm sure I'll be spending some time there for sure. And then, yeah, just keep it cool. Go and enjoy it. I mean, I know everyone says go and enjoy it, but literally go and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's our first one.
It was when John was here yesterday, we were talking about the mental side of things. Uh-huh. And one thing I didn't know is that he said he struggled mentally in his career and felt like, you know, when he started caddying for Wyndham, you know, he helped him go through all the things that he's talked about. And he said the turning point, this is really cool. He said the turning point was there was one round a few years ago. Like Wyndham sets goals before every round. Like his goals for the round were to like smile at the crowd, make a birdie after a bogey and like tell a joke or something like that. I can't remember the third one. But he said after the round, like he didn't like his score wasn't that good, but he just kind of looked back and he was like, I hit my goals for the day. Like I enjoyed it. Like I had fun. I smiled and laughed with the crowd. Like I made that one birdie after the bogey. Like I did the stuff that I said. And like when you hear Scottie Scheffler talking to all these guys about just having fun. I think it might be the infamous picture of Scottie at the Olympics when like his goal for the Olympics on his whiteboard is just to have fun.
To have fun, yeah.
And then he won the gold medal. So yeah, that's pretty fucking fun.
But that would be pretty fun. But yeah, I think, you know, mindset and playing freely, having fun, whatever you want to call it, is so big in the game of golf. And I've definitely changed my mindset on golf. Like I used to be, feel nervous and tentative and make poor decisions based on how I was feeling emotionally. And now it's just like privilege for, right.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
100%.
It's just, now I find it's a privilege, you know, I don't get to walk. I go get to play golf and stuff like that. And so my mindset's definitely changed. You got to be confident. Confidence is like, I think one of the biggest things in golf. You know, people say having a good mindset, but like, how do you define that? What does that mean? To me, it's confidence. Like if you stand there and, you know, think, I don't know, T-shirt, you know, think 18 at Winsong. You're hitting driver, you're off the tip.
Yeah. Right?
If you're aiming over the corner and you feel confident about it, I'm sure it will be a way better tee shot than if you're standing there like, oh,
don't go right, don't go right, don't go right.
Yeah, don't go right, don't go right. Do you know what I mean? So it's confidence is such a big thing. It's, you know, working with psychologists for a long time. It's, you know, body language, positive mental attitude, self-talk. You know, they're the biggest things. If you stand there and say that you're going to hit a good shot, I'm probably 7-8 times out of 10, it's going to be a better shot than say, ah, there's trouble over there, there's trouble here, and do you know what I mean? It's
100%. Yeah. I mean, hindsight's always 20/20, but whenever I look back at my rounds, it's always like, you know, I was fully committed to a shot. I wasn't like trying to do something cute. And I think like the biggest thing for me is it's always the shots where, I don't know, let's say I've got like 157 into a pin, like that middle pin, like it's just no wind, right? 157 dead middle, hit your shot. Like for me, that's between a 9 and an 8. And I've noticed whenever I like fully commit to hitting a good hard 9 is infinitely better than the, you know, I'm going to knock down an 8. Like the 8 knocks down and goes like 145, you know, or like I blade or I'm just not committed. So I've been trying to get better at that, but there's, you know, always that kind of blessing and curse of like, you know, eventually when you get to that elite level, you do have to be able to hit knockdown shots, kind of shape shots. And I think that's, you know, where the difficulties come in mentally. But in hindsight, it's always, you know, just fully commit to whatever you're doing, mm-hmm. right? Like even if you are trying to do something a little bit different, like at least fully commit to it and hit the full shot. And it seems to work out 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck. We're going to have you, both of you guys on, after May of next year, see how you guys did. Hopefully you guys get a chance to, hopefully with a trophy and hopefully these aren't like white plastic picnic tables and maybe we up the game a little bit.
Looks pretty good.
Looks all right. So I appreciate you coming on and talking a little bit about, the elite game of, amateur golf, and good luck in May with, our friend Drew Bosley. And, again, congrats on making a USGA event. That's really fucking cool, dude. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Appreciate it.